I'd like to tell you about something I've been very interested in over the last couple of years. I'm interested in constructing a holographic description of cosmology. So I'm interested in to what extent can we describe four-dimensional cosmological evolution in the language of a three-dimensional quantum field theory. So specifically for today's talk, I'd like to tell you about a precise and quantitative holographic description of a class of inflationary slow roll models. So we're going to see how four-dimensional inflationary physics emerges from the physics of a three-dimensional quantum field theory. By precise and quantitative, what I mean is that we can really do calculations in the three-dimensional QFT, and we can recover standard cosmological observables, such as the slow roll power spectrum and also non-Gaussianities. The precision in my title refers to the fact that we could even get, this is what I'd like to tell you about today, how to get back the slow roll power spectrum to second order in slow roll. So my interest here is primarily theoretical. You know, in order to understand how holography for cosmology works and to test our understanding of holography for cosmology, I want to see, you know, I want to try and get back standard inflationary results that we understand very well. I'm doing this as a test of this holographic framework for cosmology. The slow roll power spectrum at leading order, you know, if you just get back some power law correlator, that doesn't sound so convincing. So that's why I'm going to second order in slow roll. I'd like to show you that you can get some really non-trivial results out of this holographic formalism. So first of all, let me just give you a quick cartoon sketch of how I think we should go about applying holography to cosmology. So the basic idea, you can set up a framework for holographic cosmology just by putting together standard ADS CFT and something called the domain wall cosmology correspondence. So we start off, on the left-hand side here, with some three-dimensional quantum field theory. Let's just say it lives on some flat background metric, and there's no gravity. This is just a pure three-dimensional quantum field theory. So for a suitable choice of this three-dimensional quantum field theory, you have a holographic description by standard ADS CFT in terms of some four-dimensional metric here. This geometry is often called a domain wall geometry. So the three flat dimensions of the QFT roughly correspond to these three transverse directions here, parameterized by the x, and there's an emergent radial direction, r. And this direction is warped by some scale factor, a of r. I've also included a scalar field in the bulk, phi of r, and this corresponds to some scalar operator in the dual quantum field theory. And the standard story in holography is basically the warping factor and also the profile of this scalar field here. These are determined by the renormalization group flow in the dual quantum field theory. So for example, if this 3D quantum field theory has a fixed point in the ultraviolet, then that tells you that the scale factor goes exponentially at larger radii. In other words, you go towards an ADS, asymptotic ADS region. You know, if you had a fixed point in the infrared, you'd find you had an asymptotic ADS region at negative, in the deep interior of this geometry, this region here. Good. Okay. Yes, I'm just coming to that now. Yeah. So the idea is that standard holography takes you from some 3D QFT to some four-dimensional domain wall geometry. For every domain wall spacetime, there is a corresponding cosmology. What I mean by corresponding is just what Neil said. In other words, the scale factor is exactly the same function as in the domain wall geometry. Similarly, the profile of the scalar field is the same as in the domain wall geometry. So, no, this is literally just, you know, this is just some function of R, just substitute R for T, this is the same function appearing here. I just put it in my hand. So what I'm saying is that take two spacetimes, you know, one is this spacetime and that spacetime, and they're related just by the fact that they've got the same functional form for the background geometry. A is the same function, phi is the same function. So I'm trying to put these things in this way here. Okay, so at the level of the background spacetime, you know, this is hardly anything profound. What's more interesting, what's more subtle, is the fact that this correspondence between domain walls and cosmologies also holds when you look at perturbations around these background solutions. And in fact, this correspondence holds to nonlinear order in perturbation theory. This is important because we're interested in computing non-Gaussianities using holography. So we need to understand perturbation theory at higher order. So you can prove in a very rigorous technical sense that I shan't go into today, you can literally prove that this mapping between domain walls and cosmologies extends also when you include perturbations around these backgrounds. If you give me a solution of the perturbed domain wall equations of motion, I can immediately write down a unique solution of the cosmological equations of motion. I can get into, you know, there's a rigorous way of proving this. The way you really analyze this technically is you can use the ADM formalism. You can write both domain walls and cosmologies in a unified formalism using the ADM decomposition, but I shan't go into the details for today. The details, if anyone would like to see them, are in my earlier work with Kostas Skenderis from about 2009 to 2011. Yes. That's correct. So what you can do is you can write, so essentially what you can do is, if you go to the ADM formalism here, you've just got a sign in the lapse function. So you simply write down the metric for both domain walls and cosmologies in unified form, keeping the sign out the front, you know, the sign multiplying the lapse explicitly. You can then write the action for both domain walls and cosmologies, and you just keep track of where this sign appears in the perturbed equations of motion. I forgot to mention earlier, for convenience, it's useful to work with this domain wall space-time being a Euclidean signature, and the 3D QFT will also be a Euclidean signature. This is simply a choice. If you wish to work in Lorentzian signature, you would just wick rotate one of those coordinates. So basically you look at the perturbed equations of motion, and you keep track of where the sign in the lapse function appears in the perturbation equations of motion. You find it basically appears multiplying q squared, where q is momentum on the transverse directions, and there's also, it multiplies the potential. But, you know, the details of this mapping aren't actually going to be important for today's talk. What's important for today's talk is I'm going to use this correspondence to obtain a holographic formula expressing the power spectrum in terms of a quantity in the 3D QFT, and I'm just going to use this holographic formula for today's talk. So the details of this formula is that I'm merely sketching to give you an idea of the background. So what I claim is that you can set up a precise one-to-one correspondence between perturbations about these domain wall spacetimes and perturbations about a cosmological FRW background. And if you use this one-to-one mapping plus standard holographic dictionary, you can put them together and you can figure out how to connect correlators in this 3D QFT with the cosmological observables we're interested in cosmology. So when you do this, for example, this is the one holographic formula I'm going to use for today's talk. You find that the primordial power spectrum for scalar perturbation, so this is a primordial power spectrum of zeta, co-moving curvature perturbation. So you find that the primordial power spectrum for zeta is related to a certain quantity in this 3D QFT. It's this C of Q. Basically, it's the spectral density associated with a stress tensor two-point function. I will give you a precise definition of this quantity and explain it a bit more later in my talk. This is just to sort of set up the talk. So basically, there's a certain quantity that's quite physical in this 3D QFT here. So you just compute the spectral density of the two-point function in this 3D QFT here. You invert it. There's a constant of proportionality. And this gives you the primordial power spectrum in cosmology. So that's it. So this is all I'm going to use today. So I'm simply going to spend most of the day's talk. I'm going to tell you how we compute this spectral function in a certain class of 3D QFTs. I'm going to plug it into this formula, and out will pop the second order in slow roll power spectrum. Okay, so in a sense, the goal is to apply this framework that I was just telling you about, and also to test this framework. So the framework of holography for cosmology gives you these holographic formulae that connect quantities in the QFT to cosmological observables. In today's talk, I want to test this holographic formula by showing how to get out the slow roll power spectrum. Now, the immediate apparent obstacle in this program is that holographic dualities, the ones we know about, are strong, weak coupling dualities. So we have a gravity theory, we have some dual quantum field theory. When one theory is weakly coupled, the other is strongly coupled, and vice versa. So for example, to describe standard slow roll inflation, which corresponds to Einstein gravity, the bulk description is weakly coupled. That means the dual QFT is strongly coupled. And the immediate obstacle that apparently arises is, how do you compute in this 3D QFT if it's strongly coupled? So the whole point of today's talk is I want to show you how to get around this obstacle. It's not really an obstacle at all, in fact, for the calculations we're interested in doing in cosmology. The reason why is that there's basically an alternative perturbation expansion we can do. Rather than expanding in the coupling constant in this 3D QFT, which is large, we can do an expansion in the dimension of a certain operator in the 3D QFT. So the class of three-dimensional quantum field theories I'm interested in today, they correspond to a three-dimensional conformal field theory deformed by a scalar operator O. This operator O is dual to the inflaton in the cosmology. And the scaling dimension of this operator O is very nearly marginal. Three is the space-time dimension. It's just slightly less than the space-time dimension. So by assumption, we have this small parameter lambda that tells you about the dimension of this scalar operator dual to the inflaton. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a perturbation expansion in this small parameter lambda. So I'm expanding the dimension of this operator, which is completely independent of the interaction strengths in the QFT. And physically, you know, nature is very kind to us. Physically, this parameter is going to map onto the spectral tilt. So effectively, what I'm doing is, you know, inflationary cosmology is due to some strongly coupled QFT, but because the power spectrum is nearly scale invariant, that gives us a small parameter in which we can do expansions in the dual QFT. So in a sense, you know, ordinarily you'd be very stuck if you're trying to compute at strong coupling in some QFT, but it just so happens that the situation we're interested in nature, you know, nearly scale invariant power spectrum, that gives us a small parameter, the spectral tilt, which we can use as an expansion parameter in the three-dimensional QFT. So I'd like to show how this works out. Yeah, so this is the plan for the talk. So basically I'd like to sort of spend perhaps the bulk of the talk just running through this theory called conformal perturbation theory, which is how we compute in this strongly coupled dual QFT with this nearly marginal operator. So I want to tell you what the dual QFT is, and I want to tell you a bit about its properties. How do you compute correlators? What does the beta function look like? And also, most importantly, how do we compute this spectral density, this object that appears in the holographic formula? We'll then just plug the spectral density we compute in the holographic formula, and we'll get back the cosmological power spectrum to second order and slow roll. And then I want to tell you a little about how do we reconstruct the corresponding inflationary geometry? How do we reconstruct the potential, the scale factors, a function of time, and so forth? And I'll mention a little bit briefly at the end about non-Gaussianities. You know, we can also do this in non-Gaussianities, but the primary purpose of today's talk is to tell you about new work about the power spectrum. So yeah, so this talk is based on new work to appear. Also, there's related work from the end of last year with Kostas Skenderis and Adam Bozalski. So this paper here has a lot of details about the non-Gaussianities, which I won't talk about so much today. But the main point of today's talk is to tell you about these new calculations here about how to get back the power spectrum to second order and slow roll. And you know, bear in mind the aim of all this is to try and test and to apply our holographic framework for cosmology to show how we can get back known, well-understood results using this completely different three-dimensional QFT language. There's also two papers that are sort of related to this one here, one by Suvat Raju, who's in the audience today. And some of the background story about conformal perturbation theory dates back to about 1987, Zamolodchikov, and there's also a very helpful paper by John Cardy and Ludwig as well. Good, okay, so let me just tell you about the three-dimensional QFT. So we're gonna assume it's gonna be the deformation of a three-dimensional conformal field theory by this nearly marginal scalar operator O. I'm gonna put this as O naught for now. So, okay, so you've got a 3D CFT and then you add in this operator O, and the coupling for this, so this operator O is nearly marginal, it's got some scaling dimension 3 minus lambda, and the coupling it appears with phi naught, this coupling is dimensionful, it has dimensions mass to the power lambda. So the point is, as soon as you introduce this operator, you've introduced a scale into the theory. You've introduced a mass scale into the theory, and that breaks conformal invariance. But provided this coupling is small, your breaking of conformal invariance is only very small. So you can treat the breaking of conformal invariance perturbatively. So you can essentially do a perturbation expansion in this coupling phi naught. So yeah, so the idea is that if you want to compute correlators in the deformed theory, deformed, so it's a CFT deformed by adding in this scalar operator here. The scalar operator is dual to the inflaton, remember. So correlators in the deformed theory, for example, the two-point function in the deformed theory, it's related to correlators in the underformed CFT. So the naught subscript just refers to pure CFT correlators. So if you change the action by adding in this perturbation delta S, think of the path integral formalism. You know, the two-point function changes by an integral of e to the minus delta S. So that gives you this formula here. So essentially, if phi naught is small, you can just expand out this expression here. So two-point functions in the deformed quantum field theory, they're just given by a sum of correlators in the pure CFT with extra operator insertions whose position you integrate over. So, okay, so we can just simply expand out like this to some certain order in phi naught. Now, since we're talking about cosmology, it's useful to work in momentum space. So if we Fourier transform this expression to momentum space, you find you know, these integrals over position, these operator insertions that are integrated over in momentum space, these just become insertions at zero momentum. So momentum space, that last expression just becomes like this. You just have a two-point function of the deformed theory, and it's given by a sum of CFT correlators. So the CFT correlators here, just using the dilatation ward identity, you know their form, their function of momentum like this, and there's just some numerical constants appearing out the front here. These numerical constants, these ANs, these just tell you about information. These tell you information about the three-dimensional conformal field theory we're expanding around. So the subscript just refers to the number of operator insertions at zero momentum. So A2 has two insertions at zero momentum. That corresponds to this guy here with two integrated insertions. So these numbers, A0, A1, and A2, they just tell you about the UV CFT. So for example, A0 is basically just the normalization of operators in this CFT. A1 tells you about the three-point function, tells you about the OPE coefficient of O with itself in the CFT. And this coefficient A2 here, this tells you about the sort of the dynamics of the theory. So the input to my calculations, just give me one second. Yeah, so the input to my calculation are going to be these three numbers, the ANs that characterize the UV CFT. If you give me a particular UV CFT, I can just immediately compute these numbers. Got it. Yeah, it essentially just comes from the dimension of these operators. Yeah, that's right. So you've got to be, I should mention that in these correlators here, I've omitted an overall delta function of momentum conservation. So, you know the dimension of O0 is 3 minus lambda, so it would be something like Q to the 3 minus lambda, but because there's this delta function which has dimensions momentum cubed, that's been subtracted, so you can work out the overall dimension of each correlator turns out as being 3, and then for every extra insertion of O, you get an extra power of minus lambda. Because O is dimension 3 minus lambda, so it goes as Q to the something minus lambda. So you put, you know, every extra O you add, you get an extra factor of Q to the minus lambda coming in. Yes, it is, because it comes. So the minus lambda comes about because the dimension is 3 minus lambda. The reason why I want minus lambda is I'm expanding about the UV CFT, so O has got to be a relevant deformation that takes you away from the UV CFT towards the IR. If lambda were plus lambda, then we would be expanding around a CFT in the infrared, and O would be an irrelevant operator taking you away from the infrared CFT. Good, yeah, so I should emphasize that, you know, since I'm just showing you some of the technical details to give you a flavor of the quantum field theory language we're using here, the details aren't really gonna be very important for understanding the message of my talk, so. So if you think of Fourier transforming this, obviously those guys give you Q minus Q, and you know, if you're integrating over the insertion position, that's the same in momentum space, that's the same as being at zero momentum. You know, you Fourier transform e to the iqx, but if Q is zero, that just corresponds to integrating over x. Yeah, so the integrated insertions in momentum space just correspond to insertions at zero momentum. Dan? Actually, I'm gonna tell you about how to renormalize this theory in a slide, actually, yeah. Good, okay. So basically we're expanding around some UV CFT. One thing you find, so we just get on to the point of how to regularize this theory. So what you find is that, so in a CFT, an exact CFT, 2 and 3 point functions are fixed by conformal symmetry. Conformal symmetry alone tells you what they look like in position space. You can Fourier transform to momentum space. You can work out what these A0 and A1s are. If you look at A1, you find it actually blows up as lambda goes to zero. So remember, lambda is telling you about the dimension of this scalar operator due to the inflaton. As lambda goes to zero, this operator becomes marginal, and you find that some of these coefficients, such as A1, blows up. So you need to regularize the theory. To regularize it, in fact, you need to renormalize the theory, sorry. So to renormalize the theory, you basically just do a field strength, a field renormalization as follows. So we take our bare operator O0, and we introduce a renormalized operator O just by rescaling by some renormalization factor Z here. And we've got a renormalized coupling G that corresponds to the renormalized operator O. And the way it works is if you want to define your renormalized theory, you have to have some sort of renormalization scheme. So what we do is we just pick some reference momentum scale mu, and we say we define the renormalized operator, the two-point function, the renormalized operator at this momentum scale mu. We can just define it to be something such as this. So these factors here are fixed on engineering dimension grounds, and this A0 I've just chosen for convenience. It matches the A0 we have here. So basically, you do this sort of field renormalization to renormalize the theory, to remove these divergences as lambda goes to zero. And it's basically just like this field renormalization, and you've got a renormalization scheme which defines what you mean by this renormalized operator O. You can work out what this renormalization factor is just by plugging this relation into this relation, because you know what this correlator is. It was this guy here. So you can compute what the renormalization factor Z is. Okay, I don't want this to become a technical QFT seminar, so perhaps I'll skip over some of the details, but basically what you can do is you can work out the beta function in a simple way. The beta function for this renormalized coupling is basically just the beta function in the Bayer theory times this renormalization tractor Z. You can compute the beta function. If you integrate up the beta function, you can find what the renormalized coupling is, G, as a function of the Bayer coupling, and you can plug this relation back into this relation here, and you work out the beta function in theory. So the aim of that last 5 minutes was just us saying, if you've got some three-dimensional CFT, you deform it with a scalar operator, you can renormalize the theory by sort of field renormalization, and you can compute the beta function for this new renormalized operator. So you look at the beta function, it's just some Taylor expansion in the renormalized coupling, and the coefficients in this Taylor expansion, these depend on the 2, 3, and 4-point functions in the UV CFT. These are the ANs, these are the input data to our calculation. There's just a single scalar field. So that's correct. Yeah. So that's right. So I should emphasize, you know, in general, you'd have multiple operators in your theory. But I'm looking at a RG flow. We'll see in just a second. I'm looking at an RG flow between two nearby fixed points controlled by a single scalar operator. That's right. Mixing is very interesting. I might mention this at the end of the talk. So yeah. Okay. So we went down the beta function. We've got an RG flow triggered by a single scalar operator. If this beta function, if this coefficient here is positive, if the OBE coefficient is positive, we find we have a new infrared fixed point. So we started with this UV CFT here, and we worked out the beta function, we find that there's a new infrared fixed point, and the new infrared fixed point is nearby. If B is of order 1, then basically the location of the infrared fixed point is of order lambda, so it's very nearby the original fixed point. So we have what's called a perturbative RG flow. Essentially, the dimension of this operator lambda controls the separation of the UV and infrared fixed points. So you know, the small parameter in our theory gives us control over the separation of these fixed points. If you want to understand correlators at any momentum, you can simply work out the properties just by expanding around one of the fixed points. This shouldn't be quite so unfamiliar as it perhaps seems. An example where you may have seen all this before is in the epsilon expansion in statistical physics. If we wish to compute critical exponents at the Wilson-Fisher fixed point, you know, then we can do it by, for example, using this epsilon expansion. So if we're in dimension 4 minus epsilon, then you know, we have this RG flow from the Gaussian fixed point to the Wilson-Fisher fixed point driven by this phi fourth operator, which is slightly relevant in under 4 dimensions. So, for example, if you want to compute critical exponents at this Wilson-Fisher fixed point, then you can do it in just these techniques I'm telling you about today by expanding around the Gaussian fixed point in this small parameter epsilon. So today, of course, what I'm doing is I'm expanding around some interacting conformal field theory rather than the Gaussian fixed point. But conceptually, it's the same idea as the epsilon expansion in statistical physics. Okay, so here's a small little point that's going to be sort of important, but it's somewhat subtle. So the point is, you know, we started off with this CFT and we perturbed it with this Bayer operator, and then we went to some renormalized operator. Your renormalization scheme, you can change your renormalization scheme around. For example, you could redefine the coupling. You know, this renormalized coupling G, you could introduce a new renormalized coupling phi that's just some redefinition of the original coupling G. You know, some parameters, A1 and A2. So if you change, you know, if you change the coupling, then basically you change the definition of the renormalized operator. So you change the beta function. So for example, under a change of the coupling, the beta function just transforms according to the chain rule, and you get some new beta function. But the point is, under this field redefinition, the new beta function is still it's still a cubic polynomial. You've just changed the coefficients in this polynomial here. And you just produce subleading changes in the beta function because you've got these multiplications by this small parameter lambda here. So this is just to reassure you that you know we're doing things properly here. But the point I want to make is that these holographic formulae, they involve the trace of the stress tensor, and the stress tensor is invariant under these field redefinitions. So you know, the precise chain, you know, the precise renormalization scheme you use, this will turn out to be important in how we map to the cosmology, but it won't change the stress tensor, the object that appears in the holographic formulae. Yes. Yeah, good. That's right. So basically we started off. Yeah, so we expanded up to cubic order in this coupling phi naught, and that will basically turn out to be which is basically this cubic order here. So when you work out the beta function is given by sort of integrating this thing up, so the area here is fourth order, But in a sense, the error is a little bit subtle. I don't want to get into it. But basically, I'm working to the minimum order necessary to get the second order slow roll answer out at the end. If I just worked a leading order in lambda, I would get back leading order in slow roll. And I'm interested in second order slow roll, so I have to go to higher order in conformal perturbation theory. But no, so the coupling is bounded by lambda. So basically, the infrared fixed point here is of order lambda over B2, and I'll be interested in situations where B2 is of order unity. So the coupling runs from zero up to a number of order lambda, and this field redefinition here doesn't change that. That means the new normalized coupling phi also runs from zero up to of order lambda. Second order in lambda, because G runs from zero up to, you know, this fixed point here, which is order lambda. So, oh, absolutely, yes, we'll see that come out. That's very important, because that'll be the change in spectral tilts as a function of time in cosmology. That's right. So the point is that the bare operator has a fixed UV dimension, but the renormalized operator has an anomalous dimension that changes as a function of RG scale. Yeah, so we'll see all that. I mean, the anomalous dimension is just the derivative of this beta function here. So let's not get too wrapped up in the technical details. But the basic claim is that we're interested in computing this object, which is the spectral density. So if you look at, just take some three-dimensional quantum field theory in the Euclidean signature. There's this Callan-Lehmann-type spectral representation for the two-point function. So I'm interested in the two-point function of the trace of the stress tensor, and it just has this sort of standard spectral-type representation like here. So, we integrate over intermediate mass states, and this spectral density tells us about the contribution to the two-point function from propagating intermediate states of mass rho. And then this factor here is just a free-field propagator in Euclidean signature, and then there's a factor in the numerator here that just comes from the tensor structure. You start off with a two-point function, the full stress tensor, and that's got momentum indices, that's got tensor indices, so you have qi, qj, and then you trace over that gives you the q to the fourth here. So this is a sort of standard definition of this spectral representation, and if you want to work out the spectral density in practice, you can use a dispersion relation in quantum field theory. So it's just a sort of one of these standard arguments where you have a branch cut, you have a contour integral, and then you've got a discontinuity across a branch cut, etc. So this is the standard quantum field theory logic that gives you the spectral density. And it gives you the spectral density in terms of the imaginary part of this two-point function here. And there's a particular epsilon I epsilon prescription that emerges. So this is discussed in this sort of classic paper from the 90s. Good. Okay, so basically to compute the spectral function, we're just going to use this formula here. So all we have to do is we have to compute the two-point function for the trace of the stress tensor. One little point that's important is we have to use renormalization group improved perturbation theory. So we take the perturbation theory we're just talking about, and we insist that it also satisfies the Callan-Zmanzig equation. So that basically allows us to resum an infinite number of terms in the expansion we were doing earlier. And this is important because it gives us a two-point function that has the correct scaling behavior about the infrared fixed point. So that's just a small technical point that's important. But basically, we just solve the Callan-Zmanzig equation. When you solve the Callan-Zmanzig equation, you have a running coupling that emerges. So 5R of Q is a function of momentum. This is a running coupling in the Q of T. I'm really, stick with me. I'm really just trying to explain the sort of Q of T language we're using to calculate the cosmological power spectrum. I'm just trying to emphasize that we're using completely different quantum field theory language to get back a result that you'd normally associate with a gravity calculation. So in a particular renormalization scheme associated with this coupling phi, you can compute the spectral function by this dispersion relation, and you find it looks like this. You can just write it in terms of the beta function and its derivatives. And it's rather nice because we're getting these interesting numerical factors emerging. So gamma here is the Euler-Mascheroni constant, and of course, those of you who know the inflationary calculation of second order and slow roll, your ears will be pricking up immediately because you've seen this constant before. And the beta function here that appears, this is just the beta function of the running coupling the Q of T. So get back with me. So the point is, we just did some standard conformal perturbation theory calculation by some standard Q of T machinery. We can work out the spectral density in this deformed CFT. Let's plug this into the holographic formula now and see what happens. So this was the holographic formula here. The primordial power spectrum is proportional to the inverse of this spectral density we just computed. Now, one extra piece of information we need to know. I computed this spectral density in a particular renormalization scheme, and by methods that I'll tell you about later in the talk, I chose this renormalization scheme so that the running coupling in the Q of T corresponds to the value of the inflaton at horizon crossing in a corresponding cosmology. This is a choice of scheme. I will tell you how I made this choice of scheme later, but just for now, we just need to know that the running coupling in the QFD maps onto the inflaton at horizon crossing in cosmology. So this now allows you to work out how does the beta function map onto the slow roll parameters in the cosmology. So you know the dictionary now between the cosmology and the 3D QFT. So for example, the slow roll parameter epsilon maps onto half beta squared. The slow roll eta parameter maps onto the derivative of the beta function. And when we're doing second order and slow roll calculations, we have a new slow roll parameter, delta 2, which is a sort of second order parameter. You know, the definition is just like this in terms of the triple derivative of the inflaton and the Hubble factor h. So basically, because in this certain scheme, the running coupling phi bar of q maps onto the inflaton at horizon crossing, that allows me to map the beta function's derivatives onto the slow roll parameters. So I just plug that result into the holographic formula with these identifications, and I get back the slow roll power spectrum at second order, as you can check from the sort of standard gravity calculation of Gong and Stewart. So, Doddy, obviously, Okay, so let me just make a few comments here. First of all, you might be wondering where are the factors of epsilon star in the numerator here. But the point is, you know, the beta function was this cubic polynomial here. It's a Taylor expansion. We truncated it at cubic order because that's the order to which we're doing our calculations. So this is this point we were talking about earlier. So if phi is bounded by of order lambda, and you find the beta function is of order lambda squared, its derivative is order lambda, its second derivative is order 1, and we have this mapping to the slow roll parameters here. So that tells you that slow roll epsilon is of order lambda to the fourth, slow roll eta is of order lambda, and the second order parameter delta 2 is of order lambda squared. So this is slow roll, not with epsilon and eta being the same order. This is slow roll with slow roll epsilon being much, much smaller than slow roll eta. And so for that reason, you know, if epsilon and eta were the same order, there will be a term here of order slow roll eta. But because actually in this expansion, epsilon is much smaller, that means you don't see any corrections proportional to epsilon or epsilon squared in the numerator here. Good. Okay. Strongly coupled limit. So the whole point of my calculation is that, yes, but lambda is not the Tuft coupling. Lambda is the dimension of this off-scalar operator O. So this is absolutely a crucial point. So the point is, you know, if you want to do calculation weakly coupled QFT, you can go ahead and do this, but then this corresponds to some strongly coupled gravity regime, which is not standard inflation. So to understand, you know, to test my holographic formula, I want to get back standard inflation, which corresponds to a strongly coupled QFT. But the calculation I'm doing is not perturbation theory in the coupling constant, it's perturbation theory in the dimension of this operator. So or in other words, you know, the separation between these two fixed points. So it's very non-trivial that we can do this calculation in a strongly coupled QFT and get back an answer. And it's even better the fact that the calculation we're interested in doing is cosmologically relevant. You know, nature tells us that we've got a nearly scalar invariant power spectrum. That small parameter there, that's the expansion parameter we're using. So, you know, nature is giving us this expansion parameter. So the thing is that the nice thing about working with conformal perturbation theory is that I can work at a much more generic level than this. I can simply say it's a 3D QFT, and all I need to know is the normalization of the operator, its OBE coefficient, and that four-point function, the zero momentum limit. So since I can work at a much more general, conformal field theory allows us to work at a much more general level. I don't have to write down some Lagrangian sum action. All I care about is this scalar operator, its dimension, and various parameters, those ANs that characterize the UV CFT. So in a sense, it's very powerful in that sense. Good, okay, let me just tell you.
A simple interpretation in photonic space, or is it a highly collective?
No, so the inflaton is just dual to this scalar field O. So in a sense, I've told you about a class of QFTs that is engineered to correspond to standard inflationary cosmology. So to the inflaton, the inflaton, yeah. So the gravity description is just going to be Einstein gravity, a scalar field, and a potential. Yeah. Yeah, so in fact, I'll come back to this towards the end of the talk, because I sort of want to discuss this result first, but basically that's right. For a given cosmological theory, the details of the bulk cosmological dynamics control the properties of this UV CFT. So we see basically later how the potential for the inflaton controls what the 2, 3, and 4-point functions are in this dual CFT. So the connection between the bulk cosmology and the dual CFT will become clearer, hopefully, in a couple of slides. Let's come back. Actually, let's discuss this on this slide here. So basically, good. So we've computed the beta function and the spectral density in the QFT. We worked out the cosmological power spectrum. We got back exactly the Slowell power spectrum to second order. It's this non-trivial function here involving these interesting numerical factors that come out. Those are exactly the correct factors. What's the corresponding geometry? What's the corresponding bulk geometry? So basically, you can reconstruct the potential for the inflaton in terms of the beta function using this formula here. This is another sort of thing that emerges from the holographic description. We know the beta function up to a certain order in the Taylor expansion, so we can reconstruct the bulk potential up to the same order in this Taylor expansion. If you look at the bulk potential, basically it corresponds to a sort of hilltop model where you've got a hilltop and then you've got a nearby minimum that's separated by some small distance of order lambda. So coming back to Neil's question, you know that if you're sort of at the top of the hill or the bottom of the hill where V prime vanishes, then you're basically heading towards a De Sitter asymptotic region. Now, you know, the symmetry group of De Sitter spaces, SO4, 1, that's exactly the same symmetry group as the conformal group, the 3D Euclidean conformal group. So basically, the top and the bottom of the hill, these correspond to the fixed points in the QFT. The UV, remember we had a RG flow from a UV fixed point to an IR fixed point. And basically, at each fixed point, you have a conformal field theory. Its symmetry group is this 3D conformal group, SO4, 1. That corresponds to the De Sitter symmetry group with the corresponding cosmology. So the fixed points in the dual QFT correspond to De Sitter asymptotic regions. So this cosmologically, this 3D QFT that I was telling you about is dual to some sort of inflationary space. We know exactly what this inflationary spacetime is. It has this potential here, which we can calculate. It's basically got De Sitter at very early times, and it undergoes slow roll to a new De Sitter phase at late times. The change in the inflaton is just very small, it's of order lambda, and the vertical change in the potential turns out to be even smaller. You can compute what the vertical change in the potential is, it's of order lambda cubed. So basically we're just going from one De Sitter phase at early times to a different De Sitter phase at late times with a very small difference in cosmological constant of order lambda cubed. Yes, thanks. So this is the infrared fixed point. So basically, early time in the cosmology corresponds to the deep infrared of the quantum field theory. So the infrared fixed point is this one here, and that corresponds to the hill top. And late times in the cosmology corresponds to the ultraviolet behavior of the QFT. That's this original UV conformal field theory that we start by expanding around. And essentially, because these two fixed points are near together, lambda is small, that allows us to understand the behavior of the entire RG flow in terms of the properties of either fixed point. So if you wish, of course, you can compute the actual scale factors of function of time and so forth. You know what the beta function is. You can solve the equation to work out the running coupling, and you know the running coupling is the inflaton at horizon crossing. So you can, if you like, you can go ahead and compute by solving the beta function equation. You can compute the scale factors of function of time and so forth exactly. But it just behaves as you would expect. It's just De Sitter at early times and a different De Sitter at late times. Which other people? Oh no. So this is just a standard slow roll second. No. So this is just computed. This result here just a standard result. You just do standard inflationary. The stars are at horizon crossing. Yeah. So this is just a standard slow roll inflation calculation at second order. So you just write down the equations of motion at second order in slow roll, and it's like a Green's function calculation. That's a purely gravity calculation. You just do this Green's function calculation to work out what the second order slow roll power spectrum is. You know, leading order is like a Bessel equation, and then you just get these source terms and these Green's functions. It's a particular realized, yes, that's right. So I should emphasize the expansion we're doing, this expansion in this small parameter lambda, this conformal perturbation theory, this is not the same expansion as slow roll expansion. They coincide in the sense that They coincide in the sense that the expansion in lambda corresponds to slow roll with small epsilon relative to eta. So the quantum field theory I'm talking about, it's dual to this sort of inflaton, this sort of hilltop type inflationary model. But of course, you know, it gives you the same power spectrum as you would get from standard slow roll inflation with small epsilon relative to eta. Let me just, okay, yes, sorry, I've got 5 minutes left, so let me just sort of quickly jump through the rest of the talk. So, yeah, so I did want to mention briefly about reheating. I mean, obviously our real world, we reheat, we have matter radiation domination, and okay, maybe perhaps we go to some new UV fixed point here, we've got some new late time to sitter phase due to dark energy, but obviously, you know, this isn't a complete description of our entire universe. We need to reheat, we need to include reheating in this model somehow. So of course, cosmologically, you know, we can just fall off this hilltop here and then we can just change the geometry at some late time corresponding to reheating. It's interesting to think about what reheating is from a holographic perspective. It's actually very simple. It sounds quite attractive to model reheating holographically in terms of the physics of this 3D QFT. So it comes a bit back to what Dan was mentioning earlier. So basically, remember, you know, what we want to do is we want to change the cosmological geometry at late times. That corresponds to changing the behavior of the quantum field theory in the ultraviolet. So we keep the infrared part of the RG flow the same, we change the RG flow in the ultraviolet, it goes to some new UV fixed point. So actually this is sort of generically quite easy to do, you would just add other operators into your theory, and this would take you towards some new UV fixed point. So you know, generically the behavior is, let's say you've got some QFT with multiple deformations, multiple operators in the theory, the behavior near the infrared fixed point is controlled by the most nearly marginal of those operators. So even if you've got other operators in your theory, the flow, the RG flow nearest the infrared fixed point is controlled by the most nearly marginal of those operators. And by assumption, that's this scalar operator O corresponding to the inflaton. So we can model reheating by adding other operators into the theory, but it won't change the infrared behavior, which is the early time behavior in the cosmology. Yeah, it's a little bit just like in condensed, it's a bit like in condensed matter physics. You know, if you want to look at critical exponents, you know, we have these theories that look very different in the ultraviolet, say uniaxial ferromagnets and say liquid gas phase transitions, you know, at the microscopic level, these are completely different looking theories, but they flow to the same infrared fixed point. And so basically their long wavelength behavior, their correlators at the fixed point, you know, these have the same scaling behavior. So, you know, by adding extra operators into our theory to model reheating matter, radiation dominator, etc., we're not changing the long wavelength behavior, which is the sort of primordial power spectrum we're interested in. So, you know, the spectral tilt along wavelengths is just controlled by this parameter lambda here. Okay, so let me just sort of mention, okay, so I won't go into this in detail just because of time, but there's an important technical point which I've slightly suppressed. So the question was, remember this question of renormalization scheme, you know, you're allowed to choose whatever renormalization scheme you like. If you change your renormalization scheme, it doesn't change the spectral density we computed, but what it does do is it does change the mapping to the cosmology. So the renormalization scheme I'm using, it's engineered so that the running coupling in the QFT matches onto the inflaton at horizon crossing the cosmology. You know, how did I choose this renormalization scheme so as to map those two onto each other? And basically to do this, you need to know about those coefficients, the ANs, that tell you about the UV CFT. Because you're talking about a UV CFT, you can calculate them using ADS CFT on a fixed ADS background. So, you know, I was telling you about some 3D conformal field theory, and it had 2, 3, and 4-point functions of this operator deformation. To compute those 2, 3, and 4-point functions, that's these AN coefficients here. You know, because this is just a small deformation of a conformal field theory, I can compute them just by introducing a small perturbation around a fixed ADS background. So just by solving the wave equation with a source term here, you can actually compute what those input parameters in my quantum field theory calculation are. You can just compute them using these simple Witten diagrams like this. So the point is basically the 2, 3, and 4-point functions in this dual QFT, the 2, 3, and 4-point functions in the conformal field theory that we're expanding around, these are fixed just by the asymptotic behavior of the bulk potential. So this is sort of where the information about the bulk theory comes in. If you wanted to do a different bulk theory, then that would give you a different mapping between the sort of bulk theory and these coefficients here. But so basically it's actually very simple. I'm making it sound complicated, but basically, you know, you can use ADS CFT calculations on a fixed ADS background. You can compute what these 2, 3, and 4-point functions are, and then you know what the beta function in the QFT is in terms of the bulk potential. You also know what the inflaton, you know what the derivative of the inflaton is as a function of the bulk potential as well. So basically that allows you to fix your renormalization scheme. You can choose the precise redefinition of the coupling you need in order to engineer that the inflaton at horizon crossing is the same as the running coupling in the QFT. Okay, so let me just, okay, one more slide and then I'm done. So Okay, so let me just briefly advertise. You can also, so today I've talked to you about the holographic power spectrum. You can also compute non-Gaussianities for scalars and tensors. You can compute the tensor power spectrum as well. This is this earlier paper with Adam Mazowski and Kostas Skenderis. So you can also compute, we computed correlators of three-point functions for scalars and tensors. This was just done at leading order in this conformal perturbation theory calculation. So the results today I'm telling you about, these are at higher order, but we just looked at the power spectrum. You can get back very non-trivial results. You know, the scalar three-point function, the three-point function for one tensor and two scalars and so forth. Okay, so let me just sum up, let me just finish here. So just the main aim of today's talk is I want to show you how holography for cosmology works. We have a certain proposal, a certain framework connecting observables in this three-dimensional quantum field theory to cosmological observables. To show you how this framework works, to test it, to apply it, I wanted to show you how to get back standard inflationary cosmology results. To do that, we looked at this scenario called conformal perturbation theory. We start off with a 3D CFT, and we deform it by some operator, a scalar operator O that corresponds to the inflaton, and we saw that basically, you know, modulo the technical details. Basically, it's a very simple way of computing using quantum field theory. You can compute all the properties you need. You know, there's this small parameter lambda, and it plays this multiple role. It tells you about the spectral index in cosmology. It tells you about the separation of the fixed points in the dual QFT. It tells you about the dimension of this operator corresponding to the inflaton. So everything is tied together very nicely. The main point I want to emphasize is just that, yes, we can get back these non-trivial cosmological results by doing calculations in this 3D QFT. We can get back the scalar power spectrum to second order in slow roll with all the numerical factors right. There's the very non-trivial numerical factors in that result. We can also get back the non-Gaussianities for scalars and tensors. And again, these have a very non-trivial momentum dependence. So in a sense, I think this is a striking test of our holographic framework for cosmology. I'd like to convince you that this is something we could use. And since we're recasting standard cosmological evolution in such a different language, the language of three-dimensional quantum field theory, I think there's great hope for making further progress with the problems confronting inflation. Thank you.
Could I maybe start with one question? So you focused on showing us that you could basically reproduce standard results. Could you just say a word or two about, are there things that you can, cosmologically interesting things that you can compute here that you cannot compute in the standard way? And in particular, I guess it sounds like your perturbation theory gets better and better as you go closer and closer to scale invariance, which sounds like closer and closer to the eternally inflating regime. Is there anything interesting to say in that?
That's right. So there's a very good point there. Thank you. So this, the aim of today's talk was to show you how to get back standard results as a test of the framework. The calculation we're doing here didn't depend on the coupling of this 3D QFT at all. The calculation I'm doing is equally valid if this QFT is weakly coupled, as Neil was mentioning earlier. This would correspond to some strongly coupled gravitational theory where you include all these alpha prime corrections. So basically, you know, there's some regions where cosmology is a very, very powerful way of calculating that you couldn't do on the gravity side. When gravity is weakly coupled, you can't compute. So in that case, you use the weakly coupled QFT to compute. So as well as trying to get back standard inflationary results to test the holographic theory, there are regions where the holographic theory is much more powerful than the standard. You can't do the gravity calculations. And in these regions, you can get back new results from using the holographic approach. Eternal inflation is something that I'm interested in that I haven't looked at yet.
You've got a mapping between the perturbations of the geometries in the 4D domain wall case to the cosmology. Do you have reason to believe that this also extends like to the quantum gravity regime, or if?
No. So what I've proved is simply just looking at second order perturbation theory. So at the moment, I've only established the correspondence for fluctuations around these background geometries. So what happens in some sort of truly quantum regime far from this, I don't know. I suppose the idea is that in cosmology, we're primarily interested in computing tree-level correlators and maybe one-loop corrections. And this corresponds to the situation I'm talking about. We have a classical background with small fluctuations around it. So, I mean, this is a very interesting question in a deeper sense about your initial conditions and so forth. But that's right. At the moment, I'm just talking about perturbations around these background domain wall cosmology geometries.
So just to follow up to this question about, when you can use this when bulk perturbation theory doesn't work well. But doesn't the analysis rely a lot on special conformal transformations really being preserved in the bulk to zeroth order? So for example, if you had these DBI type models where and the kinetic term for the inflaton just broke special conformal transformations immediately. then this wouldn't work, would it?
Yeah, so I haven't thought in detail about, for example, DBI models. I thought a little bit about what happens if you change. So at the moment I've been telling you about, you know, minimally coupled gravity with gravity minimally coupled to a scalar field and a potential. What would happen if you change that action? For example, if you added Gauss-Bonnet type corrections and so forth. Basically, that it was a slide I skipped over. Basically, you know, if you change the bulk action, you'll basically change these 2, 3, and 4 point functions in the CFT that I'm expanding around. So in a sense, the nature of the bulk gravity theory is encoded in what those 2, 3, and 4 point functions in the CFT are, those AM coefficients. So, you know, so what I would expect is if you did a DBI type model in the bulk, you have to recompute what those AM coefficients are in the CFT you're expanding around. But basically, I think it should work out.
Yeah, no. I mean, just like in our results that you mentioned, the problem is that if you, in these DBI type models, the kinetic term for the inflaton breaks special conformal transformation so badly that it's just hard to use conformal invariance at all to constrain these 3 and 4 point functions. So that makes things difficult for us also. And
yeah, that sounds very interesting. So I haven't thought about DBI in detail at all, but I mean, I'd be interested to discuss with you about this. It may be a way of extending logic to such backgrounds. I'm not sure at this stage.
So in your example, you considered lambda to be a fixed number in the UV, let's say.
It's 0.02 if you want to match to the data.
Yes, but I'm saying in your computations, it was a constant, right?
Yep.
Now, my question is the marginally relevant limit an interesting limit, meaning lambda going to zero in the UV, like, I don't know, a Young-Mills theory is asymptotically free in the UV, and it's only marginally relevant, the coupling constant.
Yeah, good. So the theory I'm telling you about today is where this operator O, its UV dimension is 3 minus lambda, so it's always slightly relevant, even in UV. It's very interesting to think about what, you know, for example, you had a beta function more like QCD, where the beta function wouldn't have a linear term, it would start with a quadratic term. Now, you can apply all the methods I'm doing exactly the same to that case. You simply need to do some different Witten diagram calculations. And basically, you get a spectrum with, you know, as you would expect, you get logarithmic corrections to scaling in that case.
Yeah, so I was wondering, what kind of inflaton potential does that correspond to?
Sorry, what kind of?
What kind of inflaton potential does that correspond to?
Good, we can work it out. So basically, the technology is all there. It's basically, the only difference, I believe, is that you have to do a coupling with normalization as well as a wave function normalization.
Yes.
And you need to compute some slightly different Witten diagrams than the ones I did. But basically, the technology is exactly the same, and we can compute what the potential is.
Yes.
I was thinking of doing it as an exercise, but I it's simply too new.
Thank you.
Okay, so if that's all, let's thank Paul again while Shinji comes and sets up.